Welcome back to Word and Table, a weekly podcast on liturgy, sacrament, and the great tradition of Christian worship and why it is vital in our world today. I'm your host, Alex Wilgus, and I am here, as always, with Father Stephen Gauthier. Welcome back, Father Stephen.
Great to be back, Alex.
Father Stephen is the canon theologian of the Diocese of the Upper Midwest, and he is director of formation at St. Paul's House of Formation in the Greenhouse Movement. Today, Father Stephen, I would love to bring up a topic that was really confusing to me, especially coming into the Anglican tradition, but maybe even just a little bit after that, was there a lot of different words for things. We've gone over this in the context of church architecture, but I wanted to talk about names of items used in the Eucharistic liturgy. So during communion, there's just this deluge of different terms. Like, you can't say even really cup or plate or tablecloth or table. I mean,
that wouldn't be any fun.
Yeah, right, exactly. So if you're new to this, I think it can be kind of confusing. So I think it would be good to go over each one of these things, also how each of these things are used while we're at it. So let's start actually first with the cup. You know, good biblical term, nothing wrong with saying cup, but what is that often called?
Well, it's called a chalice, is a typical word. And what it comes from is, if you're drinking wine, you don't want to spill it. And so in the ancient world, this comes from a Greek word that went to Latin, becomes calyx in Latin. But it meant a cup, a special cup that had a heavy bottom, you know, a wide bottom so it wouldn't spill. So you couldn't tip it over. Mm. So the idea was a wide bottom so you couldn't tip it over. That's what made it. And normally the original ones, if you look at them in early pictures we have, right now we have it look like wine goblets a lot. But actually what they would be is they'd have this big thing like the bottom of one of those, but then they had the cup right on top of it, you know, like this tiny little stem. But the idea was it would be heavy, so you couldn't tip it over. And typically it would have two handles, because the idea would be when you actually distributed communion, it would help make sure you didn't spill anything. But that's where it came from. Chalice was the word for it meant a cup that had a heavy, separate base. You know, not just the cup itself, it had a separate base which is designed to be heavy so it wouldn't accidentally spill, it would resist spilling. It was sort of the tumbler like we'd have now for Starbucks or something. The idea, if you spill in your car, you know, that was the idea, how do you minimize spilling?
I see, yeah.
Now, normally the big thing about this too with chalices, first of all, there's only one chalice. I mean, the idea, the theory is we're supposed to be focusing on the one cup, you know, as far as the Eucharistic liturgy. So if we need more wine, we normally have that in flagons, no special term, that's a regular English term. You know, we just have special pitchers that we use with the wine because we don't have multiple cups. That's a bad symbol. Remember Jesus said, we drink the one cup, you know, we eat the one bread. Normally, the rule was, though, it had to be made over something that was not porous. Like clay or something wouldn't be good because you don't want the wine's going to seep in. You want something where it cannot actually go into the material.
Yeah, yeah.
So later on, and they wouldn't make it out of glass because glass could break.
Okay.
They thought just, you know, a sign of respect. You wouldn't put something that would risk breakage. So you don't want it to spill and you don't want it to break. So you don't have glass, you have this big bottom, and that's what's called a chalice.
Okay, great. I don't think I see any glass chalices anyway, so that makes
sense. I've seen this done.
Oh, okay.
On more than one occasion, it's not the tradition at all. The tradition from the very beginning was not glass, because you don't want to have anything that is very likely to break. Now, you can have things like pottery type of things, you know, heavy pottery things, as long as it's glazed, so that something seeps into it. So it's called a chalice. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the chalice. That's the cup. But then right next to the cup, there's often a really tiny plate that's just big enough for a round piece of unleavened bread. So what's that one called?
That's great. It comes from the Greek word. It's called a paten, P-A-T-E-N, paten. I think of like General Patton, but spelled differently. Okay, it's a paten. And it comes from a Greek word, patane in Latin, patina, meaning a shallow dish. And sure enough, it fits exactly onto the top. It's sort of like you go together, you need a dish, you need a cup. So you bring the dish and the cup, you put one fits in the other. So it's easier to carry.
Okay. So straightforward means shallow dish. That's what it is.
A shallow dish. And it's just a plate. It's the plate we put the bread on.
Got it.
You go into lunch, you have something to drink from, and you have something, a plate to put the lunch on. You need a plate to put the bread on. So we have a paten, we have the chalice with that big bottom, and then we have typically a stem, and then we have on top of it a little plate that fits on the top to carry it out. We take it off as soon as we get there, but you know, we have this little plate to put on top to help carry it.
Right. Okay.
It fits together the same we would have like a saucer and a cup. You know, the two fit together.
Sure.
They're designed to fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Or teacup something, you know, where they have that little top it'll fit on or something.
Okay. So then there's a cloth that is on top of the table, but it's not the big tablecloth, as it were. It's a smaller, almost like a placemat, except it's sort of an unfolded napkin.
Yeah. A big unfolded napkin, like.
Big unfolded napkin, yeah. Right on top, in the middle of the table. And that's where you see the paten and the chalice put. It's always put onto that. So what's that called?
Well, it's called the corporal. Corporal comes from the Latin word for body. And what it meant is you have the fine linen is what you have. That is, by the way, the cloth, sometimes people don't know this, the cloth on an altar is always, always, did I mention always, white. It's never seasonal colors.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so fair linen and things. It's always white.
Okay.
But the trouble, think about it this way. You have this beautiful, long, glorious tablecloth. You don't want to, two things is one, you don't want to get it stained, like with wine spilling, you know, the natural things from drinking or something, a drop comes out, and for the breadcrumbs. So the idea is you put sort of a tablecloth on top of the tablecloth, which is called the corporal.
Okay, got it.
And the corporal comes from the fact that, you know, the bread body of Christ is that any crumbs that fall off the plate, they'll be easy to gather them. Because mm-hmm. If you have the napkin spread out, you can just put the napkin together and you can gather the crumbs. It's meant so you could gather the crumbs. So it's that way, but also that's exactly in the place where you'd be pouring the wine, you know, from the cruet, where if there's going to be a spill or something, it'll go there so you don't damage the entire altar cloth.
Sure.
It also has another meaning, is the question became sometimes, especially for Roman Catholics and very, very high Anglo-Catholics, is, you know, we say the sacrament is, we have to intend to do what the church does. So the question is, how do we know that we intended to consecrate everything on the altar? And I would argue, well, the fact it's on the altar. But but others would say, well, the fact you put it on the corporal means you don't have to actually touch everything. For people who are very Anglo-Catholic type, they'd say, you don't actually have to touch everything, like touch every flagon of wine. Yeah, the very fact it's on that. So the tradition is if you have other extra flagons of wine, if you have trays with cups or anything like that, they all at least touch the corporal. Because by definition, anything that touches the corporal is intended for consecration.
Understood. Okay. So it's sort of like a little, how do you put it, like an aid to help the priest and everyone indicate or remember that he's intending to consecrate this. He's not missing it if it's touching the corporal.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Because some people, especially in earlier times, might have said, well, does he touch every single... No, it's not like that, but it's just showing the intent is that everything here be consecrated, that all these prayers is for everything.
Got it. Okay, so that's the corporal, but then there's also kind of like another little napkin thing that's not...
A napkin with a cross on it.
Yeah, that's not unfolded. It looks like a really fancy napkin, like if you go to a steakhouse or something like that.
Well, that's exactly what it is, except that we couldn't call it that, so we're going to call it a purificator.
Okay, great. It's, so what's the purificator?
Yeah, when a napkin goes to seminary, it becomes a purificator. And so what happens, it's just used to wipe wine from the side of the chalice. You know, when people are sharing the chalice, you know, you wipe it so we don't have anything drip and, you know, to clean it for the next person. And it's used to clean up spills. So that's all it is. It's a napkin used to clean up spills and also to wipe the cup after everyone's drunk from it. You know, for each person, you wipe the cup. That's called a purificator.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a big word for the thing that wipes up the
It's completely
wine.
Practical. It's completely okay. Practical.
Great. All right, so then there's also sometimes, you don't always see this, but sometimes on top of the chalice, there's kind of like a square piece of cloth that maybe it looks like linen wrapped around fine linen wrapped around cardboard or something like that. But it's stiff, doesn't really bend or flop like cloth, but it's on the top and, you know, it's taken off at the time of the Eucharistic prayer. I haven't used one of these, but what's that called?
It's called a pall, a P-A-L-L, pall.
Okay.
And what's interesting about that, this is from the fact that the church started in the Mediterranean. And in the Mediterranean, the problem is when you have wine out, what can happen is that bugs get in it. And actually, we've actually had this happen at the cathedral before we were in our new location. We actually had one Sunday with the flagons out and things. Somehow we got these little flies got everywhere.
Oh, no.
We actually had to go out and get new wine. I mean...
Is that bad?
Yeah, we just discovered a thing in the office. Whoa, we have a problem here because, yeah, but it was a real problem Mediterranean. The flies will go around this and things. It might fall in. And so the whole purpose of this beautiful thing, that's why we don't use this. It's not practical. We don't need it now. But the actual purpose was to put it on top so that when it wasn't actually being drunk from or something, we didn't have things getting into it.
Okay. So it's just, again, practical thing.
It was
keep
practical.
Things out of the wine.
It was practical to keep things out of the wine. That's it wasn't a deep spiritual significance. It was simply to keep stuff out of the wine.
Sure, sure.
But they became works of art. I mean, people with all these beautiful embroideries on them and things. And so,
yeah.
That's a Paul.
So, again, also looking at chalice coverings, there's sometimes an additional one as well. And it's like a cloth that's sort of just draped over the chalice entirely. What is that thing called?
That's called a chalice veil. And okay. By the way, this is the principal reason people still use a pall, even though we don't have a fly problem typically, is because you need this to give shape to the chalice veil. Now you say, why do people want this chalice veil? The real answer is people love the matching of the liturgical colors.
Oh, I see.
So this allows you to get the liturgical colors on the altar.
Okay, got it.
That's practically a real... but they have a chalice veil. You put all of so people don't see you carrying all of the dishes, so to speak. You know, they just see they see the priest would come and bring these in and under this beautiful veil, which is the color, the same color as the vestments. They often match the vestments, and he put it on and then take everything apart.
All right. Also, sometimes Father Stephen, again, we've got another thing with the chalice here. It looks kind of like a little purse, but it sits on top of a chalice. Again, I very rarely see these, but what's that thing? And also, maybe you could give a little more accurate description of what it looks like. I've just seen it so seldom.
Well, imagine two cardboard squares, really like cardboard with two squares, and joined at the bottom, and then like one of those accordion files you have for your file cap, you know, with bigger files.
Yeah, yeah.
And it opens up. It's like it's meant to be like a little purse. It has square pieces of cardboard, you know, covered by, or board covered by. By cloth, and it opens up, and you can put stuff in it. And that's called the Latin word for purse is a bursa. That's where you get the word purse from, actually, bursa. And they call it a burse, B-U-R-S-E, a burse. And you know what you do there is you in that that's where you put the corporal folded up.
Oh, okay.
See, if you're really going all for broke on this, what you do is you actually set the table. So when you come out there with all this, is the first thing you do is put the corporal on. You spread out you take the burse and pull out the corporal and put the corporal on top of the altar cloth, you know,
okay.
Fine linen. Then you put everything, take everything apart. You know, you take off the chalice and the paten, and you put the purificator off to the side.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of, you almost like, so all of these things together are, is, so you can, so we just named like five or six different things that you do with the paten. Can you do all of them at the same time, or do some of these have to be used and other things can't be? That's just a lot of stuff around a chalice.
Yeah, the only things that are necessary is all you need is a chalice and a paten.
Uh-huh.
You know,
but you can't. But my question is like, can you combine all of these things together in one Eucharist?
Oh, they do. What they do, they call it a vested chalice. And in really hard church setting, what you have is like this: you start with your chalice, okay, your basic chalice. Now, you remember that purificator, that napkin? We're going to put the napkin across the top of that cup. Okay?
Okay.
Next step is we have that, we have the paten, which is the saucer with the cup. We're going to put that on top where it fits on the top of this.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have chalice, followed by napkin, followed by our dish. So far, so good. Then we have that pall, which is that square cloth, right, to keep out the flies. We put that on top of the paten. Then we put on the chalice veil. Then we put on top of the chalice veil, we put on top that the bourse, and inside that bourse is the corporal.
Mm.
That's a real load. And
yeah, so if you assemble all of these things together, you like resurrect Edward Pusey from his grave or something.
Pretty
that,
much
right?
So, yes. But that's how it's done. That's a traditional way it was done. Again, most of us, we just, but for people who do this, that's now you know everything. Those are all the terms we have. We know what a chalice is, a purificator is just that napkin. The paten's just that small little shallow dish for the bread. The pall is, which you don't see very much, but you would see it in a high Catholic church, is that stiff piece of cardboard in white, always white, which is used to put over the chalice until you actually get to the Eucharistic prayer. So when it's okay. sitting there, there's no chance of something falling in. You have the chalice veil you can put over all of this. Then you have the bourse, which is that thing that's, again, like two of those, two squares with a little expanding file holder thing to hold them up. And you can open it up and you put your corporal and fold it up and you can go out there, the priest would go out and take it out, or the deacon go out and take it out and put it on like a tablecloth, and then put all the things out. Set the
beautiful.
Table.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Maybe one day I'll get to do that.
Well, you're close to a very Anglo-Catholic diocese there.
That's true. Yeah, we've been hanging out together a lot. Yeah. I have been starting to see these things a lot more frequently. It's fun.
You're all set. Yeah, the first time you see them is a lot. But so we just want everybody, our listeners, to know what the names are for these things. Have you seen
Absolutely.
Them?
So there's another thing that looks kind of like another chalice.
Yeah.
Like a little, but it kind of looks a little bit more like a little bowl, but it often has a little stem on it. And I've seen people take the bread out of that and then put it on the paten. So what is that called?
Well, actually that's called a ciborium. And what a ciborium is there are two different forms. One time, like with Roman Catholics especially, you see something that looks just like a chalice, except has a fit on top with a cross on top of it. Stand-up cross. When I was a kid, I thought it was the neatest thing in the world. It's a little stand-up cross on the top
yeah,
of it.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a top of the cover that has this fancy little cross that stands on top of it. But more common in Anglican churches, you'd have, they're like little round like bowls and things. But again, they have a top with a cross typically on. They don't have to have it, but typically that's what you have. Mm. And what they're used for is actually consecrated hosts. So it's okay. what you do. You don't actually put them on the paten. It would be for hosts that you had from an earlier service or something that you can take out of reserve sacrament, or you take from the credence table, like from the first service or the second, if you're running out of hosts.
I see.
So it's a place to keep extra consecrated hosts.
Okay.
And it comes from the way that the ciborium comes from a Latin word for drinking cup. But it's, you know, the chalice was the emphasis was this heavy bottom. This is just a cup with a top that with a lock on top.
Okay, got it. So great. So you wouldn't put that on the altar. That's for already consecrated stuff.
Yeah, right. You're right. By definition, it wouldn't be on the altar. It would just be somewhere else. You bring it up to the altar.
Okay.
When you need it.
All right. I'm going to throw a few other items at you, Father Stephen. Mm-hmm. Not all of these would you see in the actual Eucharistic liturgy itself, but they have to do with the Eucharist. Some you will, some you won't. So one of them is it almost looks like a little pillbox, a little circular pillbox or something, that also carries consecrated hosts. What's that called?
It's called a pyx, a P-Y-X, mm-hmm. pyx.
Okay.
And
when would you use that?
That's used to carry the Eucharist to the sick. So if you go in the hospital, give communion for people there, you put the host you need in one of these. They come in different sizes, but they're always like pillboxes. And they'll normally have a religious design on them, like a cross on the top or a Lamb of God. And it's just simply used as a respectful way to carry the hosts.
Okay, cool. So a priest would take those to the sick or something like that?
Uniquely, to take it to like the sick in the hospital or somebody at home or to the dying. Whereas a ciborium is used for church, it's for larger quantities of hosts. You know, it's basically for the rebalance of your hosts, as opposed to a pyx is a small thing. It just you put a few hosts in it, you know, to bring to distribute to the sick.
Okay, great. So there's another thing that you'll see sometimes behind the altar, sometimes on it, but it's like a little, again, this is another place to put the consecrated host at the Eucharist. And it's like a little, it's like another little box. And it often has a little door on it. But what's that one called?
Well, for Anglicans, that wouldn't be our case, except from really traditional Anglo-Catholics. Normally, like in a Roman Catholic church, by their rules, it's called a tabernacle, which is, I love it. The word comes from tabernaculum, which is the Latin word for small tent.
Okay.
little, you know. And it basically is a place, a box where you'd keep your ciboria that had hosts in them.
Okay.
It was just a place for reserved sacraments. Saying the idea came from even the early church. What happens if somebody gets sick during the week or something, and the people would want to take communion before they died? And communion was always part of the weekly Eucharist. So they wanted to keep some in case somebody were sick or ill or were dying and wanted to have communion in a very critical time. And so it was simply the box, the little tent that you'd hold them in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they put it into a wall, it's called an ombre. A-U-M-B-R-Y. So if it's in a wall, it's called an ombre. Although ombre can also be used for other things, like keeping holy oils and things. But tabernacle, it's always find one in the Catholic Church. A lot of Anglican churches don't have reserved sacrament. But if you do, but they typically would not actually be on the altar. In the old Catholic churches, they used to be on the altar, but they insisted they be taken down from the altars in the Catholic Church after the Second Vatican Council.
Oh, really? Okay.
The idea was you wanted to focus on the actual Eucharistic prayer, not pre-consecrated hosts.
Yeah, I feel like I might be mistaking the tabernacle for the ombre. But yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and the ombre the ombre is never out front. The ombre, unlike the tabernacle, is always going to be in some back room, like in the sacristy.
Oh, really? So it's not in the sanctuary really at all?
No, it's normally, I mean, historically, it would be the ombre, if it were used for, tended to be elsewhere, you know, off to the side. It was never very prominent.
Okay, I see. I see. Okay, great. So there's also something called, I'm going to just tell you the ones that I know, Father Stephen, and you can maybe fill in some if I've missed any. But there's also a little, almost looks like a little lantern, sometimes not so little, but it's burning incense. Like it's got incense coming out of it. I'm sure that has a special name, right?
Of course it is. It's called a thurible.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Which is simply something one burns. What makes it a thurible, is the fact that it's movable, that the fact it has a chain on it, that you can actually move it, because you typically burned in the ancient world. You'd burn incense in braziers, you know, basically like barbecues. You put it on, you know, to change the smell in a very smelly world. But if you actually had a design for carrying, so it has chains on it, it was called a thurible, and that basically means, you know, a portable thing you could carry incense in.
I see.
And it comes with something neat. Where do you keep the incense itself?
Yeah,
is you keep it in something cleverly called the boat.
I see. It kind of looks like a tiny little sugar boat or gravy boat or something like that.
Yeah, as a kid, it really looks like a Viking boat. It has the shape of like a Viking boat. It's neat.
Yeah.
But traditionally, that's why people called it the boat.
Okay, and then I was just at a mass yesterday, actually, and that every time certain things in the Eucharist happened, there was the altar boy there would ring a little bell. I think this one had, the one that I saw actually had four little bells kind of attached together. But what's that called?
It's called the Sanctus bell. Remember in our service, we sang holy, holy, holy.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the Eucharistic prayer. Well, that's called Sanctus in Latin. Sanctus, Sanctus, Sanctus. And this was a bell in big cathedrals and things. And also remember, for a lot of church history, we had something called a rood screen. People couldn't actually see things happening up front.
Right. Yeah. We've talked about that in our architecture episode.
Right. So how could people know what was going on? So we'd actually give them audio signals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they'd ring this bell. They'd ring it three times. When you say, holy, 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 they'd ring this bell and everyone would know, oh, okay, here's where we are. Okay. At the words of institution, you know, where they'd, this is my body given for you, do this in remembrance of me. They'd ring the bells three times. At the wine, they do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, epiclesis, you know, send your spirit upon these gifts.
Yeah.
And at the great amen, amen, they'd ring the bells.
Okay.
So those are times that would tell people where we were in the service.
I see. So something really important is happening right now, kind of thing. Pay attention. Okay. Yeah. Well, so that's the stuff I know, Father Stephen, but is there anything I've left out?
Well, some of people might have been in churches where they sprinkle holy water. And they have a special little stick that actually is hollow, that has water in it, and they have a ball on the top of it that has holes in it. And they call that an aspergillum. I can't make that up. Aspergillum. A-S-P-E-R-G-I-L-L-U-M. Aspergillum. Not aspergillium. I've heard some people are Anglo-Catholic that put an extra I in there.
Got it.
You confuse your Roman friends.
Okay.
It's an aspergillum. It comes from a Latin word, which simply means sprinkle. Aspergo in Latin means to sprinkle. I sprinkle you. And so that's where the aspergus me domine hyssope from the psalm says, Lord, sprinkle me with hyssop and I shall be clean in Psalm 51.
Yes.
So aspergillum means simply this little thing you use to sprinkle holy water with.
Okay, okay.
And in some really Anglo-Catholic churches, what happened is early on in the church, when people brought up things at the offertory, they sometimes bring up stuff we call gifts in kind, like actual fruits and vegetables, but it could be dirty. And so people wanted to wash their hands before they went to the altar. And so they had a hand washing, which originally is practical. But people started giving symbolic views, like symbolizing you're trying to be pure for the altar. So some churches retain that, and they call it a lavabo, because there's a prayer. We'd pray the psalm saying, I wash my hands in innocence, and I go about your altar, O Lord, giving thanks. Remember the Psalm 42, I think.
Yeah.
You go around the altar. Lavabo inter intercantes manus meus. You know, we say is Latin. I wash my hands. So it's called lavabo bowl because, you know, the little altar server would bring this. He'd bring his, like a butler. You know, I was an altar boy. You'd have a little towel over your arm, and you bring this little thing out with water, and you'd pour where he put his hands there, and you take the towel and wash his hands. That's called a lavabo towel and a lavabo bowl.
Okay. Lavabo bowl. Got it.
Yeah.
That's a good tongue twister, actually. Lavabo bowl. Lavabo bowl. Lavabo bowl. Okay.
Yeah. Another thing is we have to use something. People can't carry candles. And when we carry candles and, you know, tapers and things, we call them torches. So the term we talk about, torch bearers and things, you know, that when we can't carry a candle in church in a procession, it's called a torch. So it doesn't have to actually be a torch.
Okay.
Anytime, whatever light we're carrying in a procession is called a torch.
I see. Okay. But this is a specific one.
No, this is any lights that we have in a procession. Any candles that are called torches.
Okay, I see.
It's just the term we used for candles when we're talking about in procession. The idea of a torch, what separated a torch in the ancient world or the traditional world, was it was something designed to be moved.
Yeah.
Think of flashlights versus regular lights.
Uh-huh.
Flashlights you carry with you. Torches were things you actually carried as you moved. Whereas other lamps were, you know, on the walls and things like that. So a torch, that's where the term comes from, was a torch was actually fire and stuff that you moved with you.
Yeah.
Like a
yeah.
thurible was, instead of burning it on this barbecue, so to speak, you would actually take this thing with you that you could carry. Somebody could carry in front to keep, to bring the good smell with you on the street.
I see. Okay, so Father Stephen, I guess this, you know, as we wrap up here, I guess this is one thing I wanted to ask you is that, you know, I feel like especially for folks who are new to the tradition, I think some of the all having different names for everything can kind of be sort of off-putting. And if there's one thing that I hear all the time, it's kind of like, well, why have all these special names? You know, everything that we've gone through here is basically something that's very practical. But because it's in the context of the Eucharist, it has this very ritualistic, you know, word significance that people often feel like you're slipping into, you know, superstition or something like that. So why do we keep this stuff around, I guess is my point.
I mean terms?
Yeah, terms and things like that.
Because if we just said a cup, it's not just any cup. You know, the chalice, you know, has certain dimensions and things. There are certain ways we want it to look and the like. It's simply a way of saying, you know, we say a napkin, it's not just any napkin, typically it's a cross on it, etc., is we have expectations of what each of these will look like, you know, because we use them for liturgical use. Like a pavin isn't just a plate. It's a plate that normally fits on the top of a chalice. You know, the two, like a, you know, cup and a saucer, the two fit together. So there are those kind of expectations we have. It's an easy way to say what we actually want. I don't want just any cup. I want a chalice, you know, something specifically used for communion purposes. So it tells us, otherwise we'd have to say, I don't want just a cup. I would want a communion cup. We'd have to say communion cup.
Okay.
And the reason we do this is frankly, these were originally were ordinary terms that simply have changed with times. Like I said, each of these were a Latin term that wasn't special.
Right.
A chalice simply was a cup with a heavy bottom. And since we've used this consistently for centuries, we've never changed the terms. The terms we always used.
Sure.
So it's not like we were looking for the term. This is the term we've always used.
Well, thanks so much, Father Stephen. Thank you for listening to Word and Table. We'll be back again next week with more on liturgy, sacrament, and the great tradition of Christian worship. Thanks for listening.